It's time now for the Sports Objective Podcast. No talking heads, just guys who love sports. Here's Dave Richmond.
Clint Harris electrifies the crowd with this interception and a 74-yard return to score and put East Carolina out front 17-0. Then the first of three pass interceptions by Kevin Walker, tying an ECU school record and propelling the Pirates to their first touchdown and lead.
Welcome into the Sports Objective Podcast as we look back to the 1983 East Carolina Pirates football team. We're very excited, of course, the usual suspects. We have Kyle from LaGrange Barber. What's up, man?
What's going on, Dave? Good to be here.
Great. We're going to have a great time. I already have a great feeling about these podcasts we're getting ready to put out about the 83 team. We want to honor them and want to thank our player coordinator, Bubba Rosenbaum. What's up, man?
What's going on, guys? Great to be talking about one of the best teams in Pirate history, no doubt about it.
I know we've got all right now on the line, we have three DBs. So I know that they didn't have any guys blow by them, considering all the, how great that 83 defense was. Bubba, do you want to introduce the guests?
Yeah, that 1983 team, that defense that we had was undoubtedly one of the best in the program's history. They were solid at every level, defensive line, linebackers, secondary. Tonight, we're very fortunate to have with us three of the defensive backs on that team. We have Clint Harris, Kevin, better known as K.K. Walker, and Chuck Bishop. Guys, welcome to the Sports Objective.
Welcome, guys. Great to be here.
Good to be here.
Good to be here.
I'm very excited. This is something we wanted to do, and full disclosure, we've all been trying to get together with schedules in 2018. So for the people out there who think that it's 36 years, I realize that, but the football season hasn't come around yet. But we wanted to have you guys on and do things the right way by giving you the platform to bring this podcast to talk about one of the greatest teams. And I guess we can talk about each one of you. We can start whoever wants to go first. How did you get recruited by Coach Emery and the staff? Whoever wants to take that first.
Let's start off with Clint.
Start for me? Okay. Well, you know, coming out of Great Bridge High School down in Chesapeake, Virginia, you know, the Tidewater area, I was actually, you know, recruited from football as well as track. You know, after having a All-American track season coming out of high school, I just decided that, you know, I needed to go to a program that was going to give me an opportunity to do both of them. You know, I was recruited initially by University of North Carolina, however, you know, after visiting about six or seven times, it was just too blue, I guess. You know, just wasn't a warm feeling, you know, going over that area. So when Emery approached me, excuse me, along with his lovely wife at the time, Miss Nancy, that was pretty much the icing on the cake, you know, could do the football thing, and could also do my track thing, and come to find out it was good doing track because I didn't have to go through winter conditioning like some of the other guys did, because I heard that was a beast.
And,
you know, I didn't have to get up at 5 o'clock in the morning in the snow on track. So that was a real good thing, you know, to do, obviously, and, you know, had a great time, great experience. You know, I'm a year or so ahead of K.K., as well as Chuck, you came in my year. I was a year afterwards.
Yeah, I came the same year.
My year, right?
80.
So, right. So you know, we had a really really solid team. I think in 80, especially our rookie team.
Yeah,
because
Brian,
you know that rookie freshman year was crazy. You know, I think everybody stuck together. They used to do this thing where all of the upperclassmen would come by and attack all of the freshmen. Hopefully they're not doing that anymore, but yeah. And so we all got into one suite, which was the suite where Steve Hamilton, who was my roommate, and you know all the guys came into there, the Reed boys, you know, twins, and a couple other guys, and we was like, well, if they coming in here, they're gonna get a ass whipping going out. So
I ran it here.
Yeah, I think that was the last time they tried to do that.
Oh, boy.
Well, Are they still alive now to tell about it? To talk about it?
I think they caught a couple. They got a couple blows. That's for sure. They didn't come back for no freshman that year.
Mm-hmm. That lets you know it was a special team then, right? You get ready for one of the best teams ever in the history of the sport of football on East Carolina's campus.
Oh, definitely. We went to war for each other. Even to this day, you know, those guys are, you know, we all stick together. We mm-hmm. you know, represent each other. There's something going on and you need somebody to come down. You know, the guys are always eager to pitch in and do that. So definitely, you know, brothers for life and Pirates forever.
No doubt about it. And what about you, KK? We've had you on before, but love having you back. And by the way, KK, while we have a chance, we had a guy email us and he told us that you were podcast gold. So he wanted you on more, so we'll have to get you on more on one of our very first emails that we had to the podcast.
That was KK, how much did you pay that guy?
I called him myself. I called him.
Hey, that was after the Temple game, so he was pretty fired up.
Yeah, it was. Yeah. Well, my story is almost I'm amazed to hear Clint say that, you know, because my story was almost the same. I came out of high school in Greensboro. I came out as a quarterback, East Carolina. I was actually recruited to East Carolina as a quarterback, and I was we ran wishbone just like ECU did. As soon as I got to East Carolina, I never even played one down of quarterback. they put me straight in the secondary, and I will never forget. But you know what, though? It was the best move for me because I don't think I would have been a good college quarterback, but I think I was a much better defensive back than I was a quarterback, though. But just like Clint said, and this is the difference between coaching today and coaching back then, and I know Chuck is going to say the same thing, too.
Yeah.
Coach Emery came to Greensboro, North Carolina, with his wife the night of signing, the very night of signing, Greensboro. It was me and Jimmy Walden had already decided we were going to go to NC State. We had already decided.
Wow.
Yes. Ed came in with Nancy. Ed came in that night, brought us T-shirts and everything. And my high school coach said the same thing that Clint said. You know, East Carolina is a program where you can play early. That's where you know, a lot of these kids today, you know, there's nothing wrong with going to some of the larger schools, but you got to look at, you know, look at the depth charts and look at, you know, you want to be playing at least by your second or third year. And, you know, coming to East Carolina, it was actually a no-brainer, though, because once I got here, I didn't realize how tough it was going to be until we started practicing, and Ed had something in store for us. I can tell you that right now because I had never even heard of a 4-day practice before. Never heard of it. And I'm gonna tell you something. That is the hard, and I'm gonna be honest with you. To this day, that has got to be the hardest thing I've ever done in my life. I am not gonna lie. That was the toughest time. You can bounce, and Chuck, you know the same thing.
Hey, as soon as you went to sleep, you were waking up. You had to go.
I'm going to be honest with you. I cried. I mean, it was tough. It was really, really tough. But you know what, though? It made us the best team in the country. And Ed got the best out of us. He got the most out of each player.
Yeah, that was definitely a real big struggle. I think a lot of guys actually quit during that first week.
That's right. That's right.
Because of the 4 days. So, you know, you either man or you mice. So, you know, if you're a man, come on. If you're a mice,
I think that's what they had along all the whole time, is trying to find out who's going to survive.
That's right.
You know,
every night, every day we woke up, there were lists of players who had quit overnight and left the program.
Yep.
And that was during the 4 days. And I'm gonna tell you something, I didn't blame them. I did not blame them. I'm telling you.
Yeah. Well, by that time, I think we pretty much had the majority of the secondary, you know, squared up. Probably my junior year. I think KK. I think when everything started fusing together with all of the players. You know, we definitely had Chuck back there. You know, had yourself. You had, you know, Keith Brown, who's passed away.
Yep.
God rest his soul.
Calvin Adams.
And Kevin Adams.
I was right behind Chuck Mizrahim. So I was learning. As soon as I came in, you know, my goal was just to make a traveling squad, really. You know, Chuck was already there. Chuck had his position already there. So my goal was just to make the traveling squad in 81, 82. And it was only 7 freshmen out of my class that made that traveling squad. So, you know, that was a huge step because, you know, if you guys remember, I think in 82 we were 7-4. I think we were like 7-4.
We were on our way.
But Ed just put that final pieces together, especially when he went out and got Kevin Ingram. So, when he found Kevin Ingram, he found the gym.
Well, that was the Villanova program that went under or something.
Right. That's right. That's exactly right.
I think we got about 4 players from there.
Yeah, we got 4 good players. Milt Corsi, the kicker. What was the kicker's name?
Was that Bushback? No.
Are you talking about Jeff Heath or somebody else?
No. Heath is from
Chuck Bushback.
Chuck Bushback.
Yep.
Yeah.
We got 3 players, and that was once we got those players in from Philly, it was.
Solidified the team right there.
I mean, it was, and we didn't know what these guys were worth. Or, you know, we didn't know anything about them. But Ed had a way of getting the best out of every class. And something else about that 83 team, if you look at those draft picks, the NFL draft picks that came out of the 83 team, I believe probably 90% of them were playing different positions than what they came in as. Steve Harrison came in as a tight end, I believe. I think it was in tight end.
Club. Yeah, he was tight end initially.
Yeah, he ended up being the defensive tackle, one of the best defensive ends we've had. Hal Stevens, Mike Grant, and I came in when Tootie. I don't know if you guys remember Tootie Robbins.
I remember Tootie.
Tackle.
And then played for the Phoenix Cardinals.
Right. That's
exactly right. Yep. So, the majority of the players that on the 83 team, he found a position for them. And we weren't the biggest guys, and we weren't the biggest against other teams, but we were one of the fastest teams in the NCAA. I can tell you that right now.
Well, you know, on top of that, I think we were probably, I think we were like the second strongest team in the country.
In NCAA.
Right. Based on, you know, just exercises we've done, hang cleans.
So we
were definitely the second strongest team in the country, I think behind Nebraska that particular year. And that's just come from doing all of the work that we did in that old tobacco barn, you know, with the strength
I've
coach.
Heard about that.
We wanted to ask you about that. Well, I was talking to Hugh Justice, who I'm sure you guys are familiar with.
Oh, my buddy, my man.
Yeah, the best trainer ever.
Hugh attended our event back in the summer, and Hugh was talking about, you have to ask those guys about the old skating rink and what it was like, those workouts under Mike Gentry.
I tell you,
funny thing, coming into ECU, I hated doing bench presses, hated it with a passion, you know, because I was running track, so, you know, it was just going to wear me down. But once we got into that tobacco barn and you see all these guys working out, and you don't know that this is a crappy place to work out at, but, you know,
that's the only thing we had.
But when we came on the tail end of that, and I started looking at actually how much weight these guys were pushing up, you know, I'm like, man, these guys really, really are working hard. And these are all of us, you know, freshmen working together, you know. And I was like, you know, coming down the road here, this is going to be a squad that's going to be there when we're seniors. And lo and behold, by the time we are, you know, seniors 3 years later, we are, you know, stronger, we're bigger, we're faster, and we're definitely a team at that point. So definitely owe that to Coach Gentry for pushing it along those roads.
I, I still see Coach Gentry on Facebook a lot. He's still got a little motivational stuff out there. He was a very good motivator, and I tell you what, we worked hard in the weight room.
Yeah. Yes, sir.
One thing I think we did more than teams did then and now is we competed every day. When we went on the field, we were going to hit. We hit.
And I mean
every
single day.
Try to protect every day. We competed and we got after it and hit every day.
Every day.
I think
we would actually pray for rain. We would pray for rain just to cool off, and that's just to cool off.
Now, how was spring ball?
It wasn't a break. We got after it, man. We got after it, and that's Emory. I have a story to tell about Emory when he was in college. He played with my dad. They were on the same football team, and I guess I can tell this story, right? I don't know.
Chuck, you talking about the one you told me earlier?
Yeah, man.
Yeah, I think it's a good story.
Good story.
Coach Emory was a competitor, and he made us compete every day. And back when he was playing, my dad and several other guys, a friend of my dad, always told me this story about him and this Russian guy or some foreign guy that was playing. They said they couldn't understand how he talked, but he weighed about 200 pounds, and Emory was like 280. But they were going for the same position as offensive tackle. And back then you had to play two ways. You played offense and defense.
Wow.
And they said they went at it at practice all day. And at the end of the day, it wasn't over. So they had an argument after practice. Well, we're going to find out who's going to be the damn starter. So they went at it, and they ended up damn fighting, and they ended up under the bleachers, and everybody was
– You can't fight on the field.
They fight, and were rolling around in the dirt and beating each other to death. And everybody got tired, went to dinner. And Dad said they got ate dinner, and they came back an hour later, and the Emory didn't show up. Came back to the field over there, and they were still under the bleachers fighting.
Oh, man.
Oh. They said they were covered in mud and dirt and blood, and they were still going at it. And I guess Emory ended up starting because he won. But that was the story they told me about. I could not believe it. They said they fought for 4 hours under the damn bleachers. They were just down there on their hands and knees, and that's the kind of guy that Emory was. He made you compete, and he was a winner and a competitor, and I think that's what he brought to our program at East Carolina.
Sure did.
I wanted to ask you guys a crazy story right there.
I had the opportunity to get to know Coach Emory a little bit. I guess it was 2007. He was actually down in Columbia for an East Carolina, South Carolina baseball series. And my dad and I got to talking to him, and he was telling us some stories about that 83 team and talking about how after that season he turned down the Miami job.
Sure did.
Yeah.
Sure did. Sure did. Sure
did. Wow. And I wanted to ask you guys about Coach Emory. I've always been told that he was a heck of a salesman. I guess that's true because he got you guys there.
Well, you know, I think his wife got me there. Because, you know, I think when you went down there, and we were, you know, kids at that point, you know, you're 17 years old, some of us 18, and, you know, you're away from home, you know, you don't have a car generally, you know, and you're there, so you want to feel comfortable. And, you know, Ms. Nancy had a way of making all of the guys feel like they were part of the family.
Yeah.
You know, so I kind of like just, you know, felt like, okay, you know, if we get hungry, we're going to go there and eat. You know, if something goes on, we can always make a phone call. You know, anything that went on. So I think my thing was, you know, having that comfortability with being away from home and still being able to perform and show your skills and, you know, have a good time. Emory was just, I think he knew that she was going to be that kind of person. So, you know, certain people, he'll just send her out, and he'll just stay in.
Coach could get anybody there. I mean, he had so many scholarships, but I guarantee you he got so many more people to walk on at East Carolina, because we'd have 150, 200 players playing football. And
that's exactly right.
And yeah.
150 yep. were walk-ons.
Yeah, oh, my God.
And they had to compete, and he was trying to find out, you know, if you wanted to play or not.
And hey, Bubba, hey, guys, they will let anybody try out. I'm talking about anybody. We had people coming from the military. You remember those guys that was from the military who wanted to play for ECU?
Oh, you know that? Yeah.
We had guys coming from the military, and Ed would let them try out. He sure did. In fact, that's how Terry Long got there.
Yep, he was in the military.
Terry Long came from the military.
Yep.
Bubba, you were born too late, my friend.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah. Bubba wanted to try out for ECU.
Yeah, wow.
That's what earlier you guys were talking about, the swagger that 83 team had, how you were coming off the 7-4 season in 1982 and all that. So that first game of the 1983 season, so obviously that was at Florida State. And they had beaten you very badly a couple of years. I think it was like 64-17 and then maybe 56-0 or something.
56-7 freshman year.
But so that game, obviously they had the tradition that had started who knows when as far as Chief Osceola riding Renegade out and throwing the spear into the field, and then the flaming spear. Tell us about that story. That's something that's chronicled on the 83 highlight film. Tell us how that went down.
Wow.
Was that just kind of a spur of the moment thing, or was that something that was planned?
I don't think it was planned.
Know
that story?
Huh?
You know the story, don't you? I don't think it was planned. I think just Keith just got. We were so fired up before the game, and you know, those guys came out and threw the spear, unless it was planned. I don't know if you got weed to plan it or not, but
no, it wasn't anything planned. No. I think, as you look back on the 82 year, you're right, they did win the game. It was 57-17 that particular year.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so we knew that coming into that, you know, we had to perform, and we were, you know, prepared. Those 4 days were no joke, so this was going to be just, you know, easy for us as far as, you know, conditioning and everything. So when that came out and they got the Indian running through with the horse and the steer, and you know, we're like, no, not here, because we're not playing. It's not the same team, man. We're
not the same ECU.
You know, it's not the same ECU.
When did Keith did that?
Yes.
Keith passed away, hadn't he?
Keith passed away on a motorcycle.
When he did that, it just fired us up. He went out there and grabbed that spear and broke it in the middle of the field, and I thought the whole teams were going to fight right there. We just out there.
Yeah, they didn't like a thing.
It was on, and then we did that kickoff that was now outlawed, where we ran everybody to the middle.
Yeah,
and we kicked the ball, and it slowly rolled, and we ran down and demolished the whole front line and fell on the football. That was
Yeah.
I think after that year, we did that so many times that they just, you know, they couldn't do it anymore.
Oh, really?
Wow.
I didn't realize that.
Yeah. I mean, matter of fact, I think we took out the guy that was in their starting All-American center was out of the game the rest of the game after that.
Mm-hmm.
But that set the tone for a hell of a game.
Yeah, hell of a game. Definitely a game that we should have won.
Yeah. I think all the Florida games were kind of, toward the end of the game when it looked like we were going to win.
I mean,
way for us not to win.
Exactly. I mean, I think you can take, like you said, those three games, and there's one play in each game that determined the outcome of the game.
And if you go back and look on film, you can't figure them out.
Yeah, you know. I mean, the Florida State first game there, and when we go down to University of Florida, was the next team.
The game at Florida, and what we had, my dad was in attendance that day. what there was the ridiculous pass interference away from the football, a rule that doesn't even exist anymore.
Oh yeah, KK, remember that?
I think that was
my fourth interception that game.
Yeah, you had. In fact, you Clint would have broke the record. Would have broke the school record. He had four interceptions in that game. One was called back.
In fact,
I still have the picture of one of those interceptions of just me and Clint running down the sideline. And I mean, that was a game that we had won. I mean, that was a game we had won. And it was one stupid play. Wow.
Yeah, well, they took that place. I think we should go play again.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
I think I can do it.
I remember my dad just saying that he said everybody, the small contingent of Pirate fans down there behind our bench were going nuts. And he's like, look for a flag. And then sure enough, the guy across the field started reaching for his back pocket. And my dad said, and he said, there you go.
That's exactly right. That's
Southeast Cheaters. Right?
Well,
yeah.
All three of those games didn't really have a big impact on us as it did on them. And so when every one of those teams was in a situation that could hurt the rest of their season, to me, they got the call. You know,
right, exactly.
47-46, England, he falls down. They call it a fumble. You know, we were just some
no-name independent in their eyes.
That's right.
And then when playing Miami, we blocked the punt. The field goal. If you look on film, there's nobody offside.
No.
Oh, man.
I mean, we look. I don't know how many times. Where are we offside? But I guess that's Florida football.
another play that I heard referenced in that Miami game, because of course they won the national title that year. But what, 12-7 at that point, we were up 7-6 and had like 3rd and 3, 3rd and 4 or something at their 6-yard line or something.
And
Coach Emery was saying that maybe Stephon Adams or somebody was hurt, so he was checking on them, and the play call wasn't one that he necessarily agreed with, and it put Jeff Heath in a bad spot for the field goal.
As far as
it having to be from a tough angle.
Now, I'm going to tell you something. That Miami game was
probably
one of the toughest ones to swallow. I'm going to tell you, that was the toughest one. Huh?
This Miami game?
Yeah, now, yes. I remember it very well.
Right. We had a change of DB.
Yep.
I don't know why. I don't know who even called that. But we switched up the defensive back on, I think it was the right side.
Calvin Adams was the best
week of practice I ever had in my life, and then the coach put somebody else in instead of me.
Yeah, exactly.
I ain't gonna say nothing.
I'm not gonna call no names, but Caparis, you know who you are.
And the play before that, the guy ran 20 yards behind him, and I was trying to tell the coach, and he told me to be quiet. The next play, they threw that damn bomb down there.
Right, and that bomb, I have to run and catch him at the what?
Yeah.
The thing about that game,
Chuck, you remember this now. The thing about that, I'm gonna tell you, that was the toughest loss for me, and I know it was the toughest loss for Ed. We had that game won. We were playing prevent defense.
Yeah.
We were playing prevent. Yeah. We were Clint. We were 20 yards off the ball, and. They threw an out pass over there on the right side corner over there, and the corner almost intercepted the ball. I was like, how did he get that pass? I was like, we didn't preview then, because they came back the next play and ran a down, out, and down on that same corner.
That same corner.
And we're supposed to be playing prevent defense. We were going to let the ball in front of us, though. Game would have been over. Clint called him on the 1 yard line, three or 4 yard line.
We held them
four plays. We held them four down. They scored on the fourth down.
Yep.
Well, they kicked the field goal and we blocked it. And they got a first down and then scored.
Yeah.
tough year. It was a tough year.
That was a crazy call there.
I was really upset that game because that's one game I thought I'd got to play in and helped out, and I didn't get to get in that game. I remember you were hurt most of the week, KK, I think.
Yeah, Calvin was hurt. Calvin was hurt.
I practiced most of that week, and I had the best week of practice I'd ever had.
Yeah.
Intercept. They couldn't complete a pass on me. And then I don't know who's
the coach that put him in. Who was that?
I have not. I'll play again. He never plays another down again.
Who was the coaches that year? I don't even remember.
I think it was El Mason, the DB.
Yeah.
But I don't want to say nothing, man, about anybody. That was just disappointing for me. But that was a hell of a game, and we should have won. And golly, if we'd won that game, we'd have probably played in the Orange Bowl. I remember Henry kicking. You remember he came in and kicked the medicine cabinet.
Yeah.
The damn thing didn't move. He about broke his foot.
Yeah, I told you that was the toughest one for Ed. That was the toughest loss. Not the Florida State game, not the Florida game. It was at Miami.
He came in, I don't know if it's halftime or after the game, and he went and he kicked like he was kicking a damn football at the medicine cabinet. And that damn thing didn't move. It must have weighed 200, 300 pounds. He about broke his toe, foot.
Yeah.
That was bad. He heard a little bit of some bad words.
For sure.
Guys, going back toward the beginning of the season, let's talk about the Missouri game because Missouri was an opponent that had been played, was it 82 or sometime a year or two earlier, and Missouri had gotten the best of us. But we went out there and went to the hotel, is that right? The hotel staff had buttons that said, "Where in the hell is East Carolina?"
And then
after in the game at the press conference, after we beat them 13-6 or whatever it was, Coach Emery said, "Well, I guess they know where in the hell we are now."
That's exactly right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, the Missouri game was I remember that game very well also because I think Kevin Ingram showed out on that game right there with his passing, but. They had a running back. Chuck, you guys remember they had this All-American running back. This guy was supposed to be 6'3". He's about 200 pounds. And I tell you what.
Lee Rousson.
What was his name?
Lee Rousson.
Rousson.
I beat him in the 40-yard dash at NC State.
Oh, is that who that was?
Lee Rousson. He ended up playing for the New York Giants.
We talked about that.
He was a
tailback.
Yeah.
All right.
I mean,
well, I tell you what, our defense, we had the best defensive line. I'm gonna tell you something. I wouldn't want to play against them. And in fact, I believe all four of them was drafted to the NFL. Steve Hamilton, Jeff Pegues, Hal Stevens, Kenny Phillips played defensive end.
He was outside backer.
I'm missing somebody else because all three of those.
You missed Jerry.
Jerry. That's right. Yeah, all four of them got drafted to the NFL. All four of them.
Yeah.
So it was a hell of a team.
One thing I can remember is that pass that Kenny Nichols caught laying out.
In the end zone.
Yes, sir. He's still alive. Kenny Nichols still alive.
Ricky Nichols.
Rick passed.
He passed away.
2011.
Somebody told me that.
That
reception he made looked like Superman laying out in the end zone.
I actually saw that catch within the last day or two when I was preparing for this interview. I think it was a 6-6 ball game at that point, and Kevin Ingram put it on the money, and then like you said, Ricky Nichols made that tremendous sliding catch in the corner of the end zone.
Yeah. Me and Ricky played a year of baseball at East Carolina, too. He was a good friend of mine.
He was the
nicest guy in the world.
Guys, talk about the NC State game. Obviously, that was coming off the 47-46 loss at Florida State. And I think that was a game, I think we fell behind early, and then late in the game after we had the lead, we turned it over deep in our own territory, and we had to come up with that fourth down stand. I think it was maybe fourth and two, fourth and three, and State maybe tried a sweep to the left side or out some type of outside run, and we scuffed it.
That was Calvin Adams, and they had an All-American running back that was I can't think of the guy's name though.
Joe McIntosh.
And you're right though. You did your homework because we got behind in that game. We fumbled inside the 5 yard line, and I believe we scored. And I'm gonna tell you something. That game right there, I kind of vaguely remember, and it was the biggest game, probably the biggest game of the year. Because, you know, NC State was always a rival game. So, we knew it wasn't going to be a high-scoring game.
Plus, it was being televised on TBS.
Yeah.
Right.
That's on YouTube for our listeners that would like to go back and watch it. That game's on YouTube, and it has the time between plays and between snaps cut out, so you can watch it in about 50 minutes.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. I'll have to go back and watch that one.
Yeah, that was a good game. That was a real good game.
Real good. I think that game, if you recall, KK and Chuck, in the Florida State game, there was some injuries in that game. I had a concussion that game.
Was that the one?
That was the very first game when I got my concussion. And so that week I didn't even practice leading up until that game. Actually, I didn't even start that game because of the concussion.
And I believe, is that the game when the Reed boys got hurt? In the same game.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah, they got hurt. Yeah, both of them got hurt in the same game. Yep.
Yeah.
The State game?
Yeah. Uh-huh. And the NC State game, yeah. They both got hurt.
There was some tough boys right there, too, them Reed brothers, man. When they hit you, they hurt you.
What was the atmosphere like around Greenville back in 83 when you beat an NC State or Missouri and come back home? I mean, everybody made a big deal out of it?
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if we can tell you that.
So I guess it was like you were the Beatles and you just came back, you know.
Yeah, man.
The people all at the airport, you know, partying every place. I mean.
Most of the people were at the NC State game, so they traveled back with us on the bus. We all followed each other on the way back. I mean that game, if I'm not mistaken, that was the biggest game in the state of North Carolina, wasn't it? 60-something thousand fans.
Yeah, that's like 53,000 fans.
That was.
I guarantee you every bit of it, because a lot of those NC State games that year, and then. A lot of those matchups at Carter-Finley were, if you looked at the top 10 games in the state of North Carolina history in terms of attendance, ECU and NC State had like 7 or 8 of them.
And I believe I don't think that was the game where they stopped the series, because I believe that, I think you guys had left Clint and Chuck.
That was 1987.
We beat them again the following year. They may have beat us. We beat them 3 years and they beat us two. It was, we beat them 1 year, they beat us 1 year. We beat them 1 year, they beat us 1 year. So it was one of those kind of deals right there.
Mm-hmm.
Well, those ACC schools didn't like us beating them too much.
Oh, no.
They still don't.
It hurt their recruiting, so they we couldn't play them too much if we beat them. That's the way I think about it.
I'm gonna tell you probably one of the highlights of that entire season. And I remember after that Missouri game, we didn't lose another game after the Missouri game. I think the highlight was when Sports Illustrated came to East Carolina, and that right there was the indication of what kind of program we had at that time. Everybody heard about East Carolina, and they heard about our work ethic. And Sports Illustrated had comments that we were the hardest working team in the NCAA. We were this in it. I mean, it was a great article, and I think that was one of the highlights. Think about it. You remember that guys when they came to our practice?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I remember that.
Yeah, and they did a nice article on us.
One of the strongest teams in America.
We were the fastest team in America. Right. We were the strongest. I think we were the strongest team in America, and we were the hardest working team in the NCAA because we practiced four times a day. So it was a great article.
Yeah, I think if you recall, that's the article that Terry was on the cover of the Sports Illustrated.
Yeah.
He was supposed to be the strongest football player in America at the time.
Right, yeah. Exactly.
Oh, yeah.
He was that guy, so.
Yeah, I remember when he broke that record in that asbestos field skate rink. I remember he broke that record.
Oh man, yeah. I remember him doing 800-pound squats, 3-set reps like it wasn't nothing. I'm like,
unbelievable. Yeah, I thought that guy was a freak of nature. I was like, his guy. And from what guys, when Terry came to ECU, I believe Terry was only about 190 pounds when he first got there. And
no,
Terry,
he wasn't.
I mean, wasn't Terry the small guy who came there?
No, that's when
he got military.
No, he was in military. He was that weight.
Yeah.
But
he came straight from the military, right?
Right, but he was 300 pounds then.
He looked like a monster.
He was 300 pounds then. Now you're talking about Jeff Pegues was 190 pounds when he first came there.
Oh wow! You know what? I forgot about Jeff Pegues. That's right,
Pegues.
Yeah. There's another draft pick.
Exactly.
That's right. That's who was on the other defensive end. That's who it was. Jeff Pegues. Yeah.
Yep.
That's another draft pick. That's right. That's exactly right.
Did he get in trouble here in Washington for hurting too many people?
some of that you can't see on the radio. I won't speak on that.
Yeah.
Not gonna say nothing.
Yeah. I mean, how I don't even know that there's ever going to be another 83 season where you get the first five. I mean, the first five defensive linemen drafted to the NFL, you got 12, 13 guys on one team get drafted. And then out of all one team, you have 17 people drafted. That's unheard of right now. It's unbelievable.
Or Alabama, you know.
The closest thing we've had to that in modern days is that 2019 we had, of course, Linville Joseph, who left a year early and went to the Giants first and then the Vikings.
Mm-hmm.
And then you also had C.J. Wilson, Jay Ross, and Scotty Robinson, who were C.J. played several years, of course, with multiple teams, and then you had Jay Ross and Scotty Robinson.
What year was that?
2009.
You know,
the second Liberty Bowl team under Skip Holtz.
Ross, I'm teaching his son and daughter right now down here in Wilmington.
Oh, wow.
Jay Ross, he played for the Packers, I think, in Denver, maybe.
I wanted to say it was New Orleans, but I know that Scotty Robinson, he's actually back here living near where I am here in the Salisbury, China Grove area. Because he played at Salisbury High School and he's done a little bit of coaching and DJing in the area. But Scotty, I think, was maybe with the Cleveland Browns for a bit as a free agent.
Mm-hmm. And guys, I'm going to tell you something else that was kind of interesting. The last game of the season, who do we say the last game, guys?
Southern Miss, I believe.
Southern Miss.
Was that? Southern Miss.
It's like a hurricane warning when they called it the Mud Bowl.
Yeah,
tornado warning.
It was the last game of the season. After the game was over with, the Canadian League was there ready to sign Kevin Ingram. Right, at, you remember that after the game?
Yeah, they wanted him bad.
They wanted Kevin Ingram bad.
Speaking of the CFL, well, yeah. There was a guy on the 83 team that had a great career in the CFL, Henry Williams. What are you guys' memories of him?
That was our secret weapon.
Yeah, that was
the punt returner. I was the punt returner until Flip.
Yeah,
and then I had to block for him.
Right, only because you couldn't do a backflip.
Well, I can contest to this. I remember the fastest guy on our team was Clint, because I saw Clint and Henry Williams race right outside the dorm one day, and Clint beat him by a footstep. Yep. So I know who the fastest guy on the team was. It was Clint Harris.
That was
a good race too, buddy.
Yeah,
that was a good race because you both ran track, right?
I was pretty fast for a white boy. Now Clint only beat me by a step. I don't know how many times we raced, and I tried to beat him so many times that he always edged me out. I don't know if he's running as hard as you.
That's because I turned around and let you catch up a little bit.
Yeah, come on, man. I was trying to beat you.
I'm gonna tell you something. That speed helped me out, because I never had to worry about getting beat deep on the inside, because I mean that helped me out a lot. So I was like, I got inside help. I know that.
They're not gonna run away from us. That's for sure.
About the front flip. Sorry, go ahead, Kyle.
At the end of the '83 season. Yeah, travesty, you guys didn't get to go to a bowl. Was there any talks? What was out there? Or was the Independence Bowl a possibility? I mean, did you guys get told, well, there's nowhere for y'all to go, or what?
I mean,
they had initially announced that we were going to the Independence
Bowl. That was the year when Notre Dame accepted the bowl bid, and they were 6-5. You remember that?
North Carolina went to a bowl at 6-5, right?
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure.
And I think Virginia Tech as well.
I mean, they had announced that we were. I remember us, everybody on the floor of Belk Hall, we were out there partying because we had announced it. And Notre Dame accepted that bowl bid at 6-5. I'll never forget that.
Yeah.
I'll never forget that.
The sign of things to come in the world of college football.
And now you got so many bowl games you can't even keep up with them. I mean, you know, they run from November through January now.
This is my personal opinion though. Until we get a real playoff, I just don't have a lot of bowls because that way teams like East Carolina don't get left out while 6-5 North Carolina's got.
Yeah. I don't think a 6-5 team should be in a bowl. I don't think that you should not be in a bowl game. I mean that's my 2 cents, and I'd rather see it.
It's all about money now. High school football is the same way. I mean, we played a school. We were the number one seed a few years ago at a team with a coach from my brother, and we played a school that won one game.
In the playoffs.
Now that they have the subclassifications, depending on which classification in, it's very possible that you see a 2-9 or like Chuck just said, a 1-10 team. That's a little rare, but 3-8 in the playoffs now with the 8 state champions, it's not that uncommon.
That's absurd.
No, that's right.
I remember my senior year, we had 3-9-1 teams. I was at North Davidson, and we were in a conference with High Point Andrews and Jamestown Ragsdale, and all three of us were 9-1, so we had to draw straws. Fortunately, North Davidson, we got either the first or second straw, and then I think it was maybe Ragsdale got the other, and High Point Andrews stayed at home at 9-1.
My senior year, we won the state championship my junior year against Scotland Harris. My senior year, Scotland County was ranked number one in the state, 9-0, and we beat them, and they didn't go to the playoffs. And they were ranked number one in the state. This,
wow.
They had the Geese, the damn Quick Boys, Norman, Greg, Tony Smith, Bobby Ratliff, went to Carolina, back, another guy that went to Clemson. They had seven, nine guys that went to Division One, and they didn't even go to the playoffs.
Wow.
Back then. That's crazy. But we beat them 10 to nothing.
Yeah.
But that's high school. That's high school. I love them guys now. They were East Carolina Pirates.
Kevin, I wanted to ask you a little bit about your career individually. So you led the team in interceptions in 83, 84, and 85. You had 5 in 83, 4 in 84, and then you led the nation your senior year. And after that senior season in which you were an honorable mention All-American, you played in the East-West Shrine Game, if I'm not mistaken.
Right.
So, and then you went on and what were drafted in like the fifth or sixth round by the Tampa Bay
right.
Bucks. Talk a little bit about your career as far as all those interceptions and how you were near the top of the charts as far as career interceptions at ECU and then your career after ECU.
Well, I'm going to be honest with you. I have got to credit some of that with Clint because when Chuck and those guys were ahead of me and, you know, I learned from those guys. And like I said, Clint and I, we competed. And we competed. We competed every day in practice. We competed during the game. And Clint would have won that title had that fourth interception at Florida Gators stood. But they, I still have that picture of that, though. But I'm just truly blessed. Even my senior year, when I led the nation, that was unbelievable. I don't even know how I did, to be honest with you. That was kind of an unexpected surprise for me also. And I had 8 interceptions in the first 5 games. So, and I do remember I was a target after the first 5 games. You know, I wasn't getting a lot of passes thrown to my side though. So that 8 interceptions went all the way through the end of the season to the last game of the season against LSU. And I had an interception, and I ran it back for 80 yards for a touchdown. That was the last interception I was tied with the guy from Tennessee with 8 interceptions, and I got an interception in the last game. So I was truly honored, truly blessed, and Clint was an honorable mention All-American also. We both made so it was kind of a, you know, to have two All-Americans in the same secondary, I tell people this all the time, and I have never seen, when we were playing all 4 years, we never got beat for 80-yard touchdowns and 60-yard touchdowns and 30-yard touchdowns. I swear, honest to God, if you go back and look at the four years at East Carolina, I don't even remember us ever getting beat. We may have gotten beat for a 5-yard or 10-yard. We never, ever, I'm talking about on either side, free safety, down the middle, we never got beat for six. Look at the scores. Look at the scores of the games. And look at the teams that we played. We played teams in the top 10.
Another thing, too, we didn't give up the pass underneath. We like they do last couple of years. I've watched so many games where they just let the guys catch the ball 5, 10, 15 yards every time.
I can't put my hand on it. To this day.
We just competed and we challenged ourselves and them. And you guys, you and Clint, two of the best, man. I tell you what, y'all.
Thank you.
I love you guys, and I watched you play with you, and I think y'all were two of the best this town has ever had.
Well, I'm honored, and thank you, Chuck. I'm honored, but if it wasn't for Clint, I wouldn't be where I was. I can tell you that right now because I learned. I mean, I'm serious. Clint had all the speed. Clint had all the talent. Clint was like Clint was a linebacker that could play DB. And
Clint
would come up.
I saw his picture on Facebook. He still looks like a damn model. He's still pretty.
I remember when we played, I'm telling you, when we played the Florida games, Clint would be up there playing 7 yards off the ball, and I'm like, Clint, I'm 76 yards. I mean, we were side by side, and he had that speed where he can get back and cover the middle. But I'm serious when I say this though, and we competed, we became the best of friends in college. But I'm telling you, I had confidence in my free safety, so I could play outside eye. Sometimes I just don't understand what these guys are doing today, because I just don't know how you can give up a 70-yard bomb, 60-yard bomb, and not give up and get beat for touchdowns like they do. And we played better teams than they did. We played the Florida State, the LSU. I played against Clinton. When you guys left, I played against Auburn University. They had 3 first-round draft picks at running back. 3 first-round draft picks, and we still competed with them. We still competed. Bo Jackson won the Heisman Trophy that year. Tommy Agee, Britt Fullwood, 3 first-round draft picks. And I tell you what, it was a long freaking day for me and Cap, for the secondary. That was the longest day. I'm telling you
something about them early days when we played Florida State, when they would rotate a damn wide receiver in every time it could run like 4-3.
Yeah, they had some fast guys in Florida.
Florida State had the best offensive scheme I've ever seen in my life. Mm-hmm. I mean, those guys did not run the same play twice. Never. No. Never ran the same play twice.
They had to have a different guy running at you that could run like a 4.3, 40. I mean, God, they had some receivers, man.
They had the best group. I'm gonna tell you, they had the best coaches, and those guys. I mean, I can see how we lost to them the previous years, but that senior year when we were about to beat them, they knew we were about to. We were probably on the 15-yard line when Kevin Ingram when they called that fumble on Kevin Ingram.
Yeah, we were going in.
We were going in to score.
Yeah,
and that was the end of the game, and that was the end of the game too.
Yep.
So. But once again though, I mean, I got to give a lot of credit to Clint though. I have to, and my senior year was something that I didn't even set a goal for, but it happened, and I'm thankful for it. And you know, when you're playing in the defensive back, you know, one thing we never got cocky. We never got cocky, and we just knew. I mean, at secondary, especially at a cornerback, you know, any given weekend, you're liable to. You could be the best cornerback you could be, but you're gonna get beat. I don't care how good you are.
Yeah.
But we found a way. I'm telling you, how can you keep the national championship, Miami, in check, Florida Gators in check, Florida State in check, Missouri in check, NC State in check, Temple in check. I mean, everybody we played, we never gave up. Never gave up the big play.
Southern Mississippi had 2 or 3 receivers that were.
And then go down to Southern Mississippi, with Lewis Lips and those guys down there. So, you know, but the talent that we played against versus the talent these guys are playing with right now is night and day. I mean, I'm telling you, because Ed Emery did not shy away from anybody. Ed Emery would have played Notre Dame, Nebraska, anybody if they would have let us play them. I'm telling you that right now.
That's what he was all about.
In 1983. Wasn't that the bumper sticker? We're going after the best. That was our motto in 1983. We're going after the best. And Ed Emery went after every big school that he could find to put us on the schedule.
He was definitely not as scared of anything. And we believed in him. And I think that's what it's all about. East Carolina about that time. I mean, we had a good team. It was a special moment with East Carolina.
Good deal. Appreciate it, guys.
Now, KK, you're obviously very adamant and really emphasizing how much Clint taught you and all that. Obviously, he was a couple years ahead of you. And Clint, you were honorable mention All-American both 82 and 83. And I said KK had 18 career interceptions. You weren't far behind. You had 16, so he had to have a heck of a finish to his career to top your numbers. And and you still currently own the interception return yards record with 360. And I don't know if you were aware of that, but just talk a little bit about your career. And then after ECU, what was it, the New York Giants maybe? Or?
Yeah, the Giants.
Okay.
Yeah.
You know, like ECU, I think those numbers speak for themselves. You know, as KK mentioned, when you start off big with interceptions, and so forth, you tend to get less balls thrown your way.
Right.
So, you know, I think the 83 team, I had those interceptions all in the first five games, I think.
Yeah.
And I think after the Temple game, I think I had a 76-yarder for a touchdown.
Mm-hmm.
Then there was no more balls thrown in the middle. They were all on the outside,
right,
and so forth, you know, at that, uh-huh, that point, because, you know, you couldn't beat us deep. You know, so that was really, really exciting back then. You know, then getting drafted, I think I was the 115th pick, you know, going into the Giants. You know, and, you know, things didn't work out how I anticipated. You know, definitely wish I could have played more, or played longer, especially in the position where I wanted to play. You know, I wasn't comfortable playing strong safety or corner. You know, I'd rather played, you know, free safety, obviously, because I could roam and I had enough speed. You know, I could bench by that time 400 pounds. You know,
right,
so I was strong enough to do everything above there. But I'm happy with how my life is now. You know, I can still run,
walk,
I can still walk.
I
can still go and do 100 push-ups straight. So I'm happy with doing that and being healthy. You know, more importantly, but I definitely appreciate all of my accolades and definitely coming from, you know, the guys that we're talking with today, you know, kind of like, you know, put us in a position where we can reminisce, you know, and we can appreciate, you know, each other and our abilities, whichever way that we go. So thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Yeah. Before we wrap it up, guys, got one more question for you three. You guys indicated, little disappointment in the way the secondary and the defense has played in the last few years. Have you guys, we had a chance to have a conversation with Coach Mike Houston, and we had a little party for the 1978 team, the Independence Bowl for their 40th anniversary at Professor O'Cool's. And Mike Houston came out and addressed the team and told each and every member of that team and made it clear that all former players are not only welcome at practice and on the sidelines and in the weight rooms, but are encouraged to come back to East Carolina and be a part of this program.
Wow.
Have you guys had a chance to talk to Mike? And he's an old school guy. You know, I think you guys are really going to like the direction the program's going. I didn't know if you've had a chance, any of you had a chance to interact with him yet.
No, I have not. I mean, but that's definitely is a welcoming voice. You know, I haven't been to ECU as much. I was going back to some of the Tony Collins celebrity, you know, golf events, but I don't think I've been back in the last couple of years. But definitely would like to get back into the program and just, you know, give some of the perspectives of, you know, just how teams are and how teams should be. I think our biggest, you know, outcome of our team was that we knew each other. We trusted each other. You know, we worked together. We ate together. We ran together.
Yep.
We bled together. We cried together. You know, if you're going
right.
to fight one,
exactly
you're going
right.
to fight us all. You know,
that's
and
exactly
I think
right.
now, you know, the guys aren't like that. It's a lot of, I don't know if even if the guys live in the same place, they probably live
they don't. They don't. Right.
Somewhere.
They don't.
Right.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I know they all are individuals, but football is the sport that has the most teams involved.
Yeah,
you know, you got 11 men on a team. You know, 53 guys, you know, well, in pros, you have 53 guys on the team, 11 men on the field, and you have to work together. So I think that's probably the biggest disappointment is that I don't see the guys at ECU working together. I don't see them talking. I don't see them congratulating each other. I see them making a simple tackle, and they're doing backflips. I mean, and then the next play, they get beat. And what the heck is that? You
right,
know,
right,
the game
right.
isn't over until it's over. So
hey,
celebrate after the win, not
one thing we had on defense is that when that ball was down, we had to have 11 people at the ball.
That's exactly right. And that was a drill. That was our drill.
Don't be the last one to the ball.
That's our conditioning drill. That was our drill.
Yep.
That was a conditioning drill every day.
You got a minus.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
So
got after it and got to the football.
Guys,
so
thank you.
You're welcome. Hey, guys, I think we should probably go to the spring game.
That was
going to.
You know.
Yeah.
That's what I was going to
tell you. One
I was. You beat me. You read my mind, Clint. April 13th, that Saturday, is the spring game. And
April 13th.
You
and
Bill,
all
three players.
No, no, that's not a problem with me.
Hey,
that sounds great, man. I love to see Clint and KK and
yeah.
I love you guys, man. I tell you what, I love everybody that was on that team. I tell you what,
that's
we,
right.
We all blessed.
Yeah, plus you guys as well.
Worked hard together, and golly, it was a special moment in our lives.
Definitely. Loved it.
Guys,
we want to thank you guys. We want to thank you guys for putting us together again because, you know, it's Clint and we kind of stayed in touch because I called Clint and tell him about what's going on in the secondary with the guys, and I haven't talked to Chuck in years. But, you know, it's just disheartening to see our secondary play like they're playing and we played at the same position, and we just we can't comprehend what is going on. I can't, and I know we have the talent back there, but I cannot see us getting beat for 60-yard, 70-yard touchdown.
Yeah.
I can't see that. That's unacceptable.
I still think it's one of the toughest positions on the field.
Yeah,
oh,
definitely.
But you got to challenge it. You got to put a challenge up and challenge yourself. That's what it's all about, I think.
Most definitely. Most definitely.
More to that. But, all right. I'm going to check out this old North Carolina State game here, KK.
Yes, sir. We'll put that out on our social media, and we'll put it on Facebook and Twitter.
No doubt about
it. That's a good one. That sounds good. Thank you, guys. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right.
KK,
man.
Hey, guys, stay in touch. Okay, stay in touch, please.
We'll send you guys the link whenever we release it.
Okay.
Sounds good. Thank you.
Appreciate it, guys.
Thanks, guys.
Okay, yeah. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Clint Harris then makes for defensive plays. First, an interception in the end zone to stop a Gator score. Then Harris follows up with a fumble recovery that will halt yet another Florida scoring attempt. Four more times this day, the Pirates stopped Florida with fumble recoveries and pass interceptions, three by Harris alone. First, it was a Hamilton fumble recovery, then a Harris interception.
Wow, what a great night to have those guys to reminisce. And, of course, this is the first of several podcasts we have, a series. What a tremendous night. And what did you think, Bubba?
No doubt about it, Dave. What a show.
Clint Harris then makes for defensive plays. First, an interception in the end zone to stop a Gator score. Then Harris follows up with a fumble recovery that will halt yet another Florida scoring attempt. Four more times this day, the Pirates stopped Florida with fumble recoveries and pass interceptions, three by Harris alone. First, it was a Hamilton fumble recovery, then a Harris interception.
my dad exposed me to that, and I'm very thankful because it was just one of many things that developed the passion that I have for the East Carolina Pirates.
I tell you, Bubba, it was a tremendous night. And Kyle, what a great night. Thanks to the guys so much for coming on from the backfield, for the DBs, for the 1983 team. For Bubba Rosenbaum, Kyle from LaGrange Barber, and all the guys, this is Dave Richmond for the Sports Objective Podcast.
You've been listening to the Sports Objective Podcast. Join us next time as the guys will be objective, and the objective is sports.